If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is an Apostrophe podcast production.
Is We Regret to Inform You, the Rejection Podcast. I remember all the hurdles I had to leap, the taboos I demolished. I remember the pain and suffering I endured without shedding a tear, so no one could call me a crybaby little girl. Manon Raume. The story begins in the early 70s in a small town called Lac Beauport. Beauport translates to beautiful harbor, and it was just that. A town of under 5,000 tucked away in the mountains a few clicks north of Quebec City that hugged a picturesque lake. Lac Beauport was a ski town, which made it the perfect home for athletes. Athletes like Pierre and Nicole Raume. Pierre played hockey and rode horseback. Nicole was a swimmer and downhill skier. And together, the pair had three kids, a boy, a girl, and another boy. Pierre built their house with his own two hands. When the family outgrew it, he built a bigger house with his own two hands. And there, in the backyard, he also built a skating rink. It would be the only rink in town, and it would be a lot of work to maintain. But he said he just couldn't accept a life where there'd be no hometown hockey rink for his sons. Manon Raume skated for the first time at just 2 years old. Unsurprisingly, she broke her arm at two, got a concussion at three. Her mother said something was always in a cast. She was a winter baby, born between two ferocious snowstorms, and practically wore skates before shoes. But wobbly winters melted into street hockey summers. And as Raume and her brothers edged closer to kindergarten, the boys decided if they wanted to practice their slap shots anytime, anywhere, they'd need an on-demand goalie. So they placed their sister between the posts. Raume says in her 1993 memoir, Alone in Front of the Net, that she was more a live obstacle or a third goalpost at that point. But something interesting happened. In those countless hours spent in the basement trying to block their wrist shots, their snapshots, their backhands, she never once grew tired. Soon their father started a hockey league. Every Sunday, local kids laced up their skates and made their way to a neighboring town's little arena. Local boys. Rayome wrote that while her older brother and her younger brother battled it out on the rink and her dad coached from the bench, she and her mother sat in the stands watching and cheering. But every week, Rayome found it harder and harder to sit still. She wanted to be on that ice, in that net. It wasn't in her nature to sit idly on the sidelines. She became antsy. So antsy, she lay awake at night fantasizing that she would be a hockey player, just like the boys, and that she would be so good, she'd climb the ranks straight to the top. Then, one evening, after one such Sunday game, Rayome's father was discussing a major problem at the dinner table. He was about to enter his team into a tournament, but they were out a goaltender, and he didn't want to lose one of his forwards by putting them in net. What to do? What to do? Rayome sat in her chair, spinning her fork and listening, antsy. But soon, she couldn't take it any longer. Like a pot boiling over on the stove, three words just poured out of her. What about me? The dining table conversation, once lively, fell silent. Then her mother said the quiet part out loud. Hockey's for boys, not for you. It was 1977. Rayome wrote in her book, an era when very few parents would have allowed their little girl to, quote, dress up like a boy. She said in her mother's eyes her only daughter would take up figure skating, gymnastics, or downhill skiing, a sport the five-year-old was already mastering with ease. But while Rayome liked downhill skiing, she loved hockey, and her father knew that was true. So he looked at his daughter, then looked at his wife, and said, "Why not?" And with those two words, it was official. Rayome would tend goal in Sunday's game. For the first time, it felt like her impossible dream might just be possible. Come Sunday, the whole family made their way to the arena. But somewhere between the parking lot and the player's entrance, Rayome's parents pulled her aside and insisted she slide on her goalie mask. She wasn't in the building yet, let alone on the ice. But hockey in their town, in their province, was a very serious game, played by very serious players, backed by even more serious parents. The Rayomes thought, maybe if she covered her face, no one would realize she was a girl. Rayome was so excited she couldn't sit still. But this time, she wasn't forced to stifle that energy and sit idly in the stands. This time, she could channel her excitement into the game. In the change room, the other boys were welcoming. She said 6-year-olds are pretty good that way. Plus, it was an age where most kids arrived at the arena already in uniform. Rayome said the puck drop preceded the most unremarkable 60 minutes of hockey. They were kindergarten age. There was lots of tripping. For Rayome, lots of fumbling over way too big hockey pads. From a performance standpoint, there was no way anyone could tell her apart from the boys. She was just as good, or just as bad. Though there was one glaring distinction. Her skates were white. When the game came to an end, the Rayomes went home, like every other family. But when they hung up their sticks next to their ski poles and snowsuits, Rayome asked her father to do her one favor. to file down the toe picks at the tips of her figure skates. Raome was appointed official goalie on her father's team. But it wasn't long before a better, more experienced goalie joined the league, and a heartbroken Raome was demoted to defenseman. She said looking back, it was a great thing. Being center ice taught her better stick handling and how to skate backwards. And by the next year, when the new goalie advanced to peewee, Raome skated right back into net, this time with sharper skates and even sharper skills. But it also made her think. Maybe when she was a little older, she'd join peewee too. An idea she then ran by her parents, and an idea that gave them a good laugh. They figured at the end of the season she'd lose interest in hockey and pivot towards skiing or ringette. Ringette was also a Canadian invention out of North Bay, Ontario, positioned as a hockey alternative for girls. But her interest in hockey only grew with every passing year. And by age 8, she told her parents she wanted to attend an Adam-level goaltending camp. Her brothers had attended similar camps before. Now, it was her turn. When Raome arrived at the goaltending camp, two men were at the registration table greeting campers. But when they took one look at Raome, they were confused. One told her she must have made a mistake. The ringette camp was next door. When she told the men she was, in fact, at the goaltending camp to tend goal, their tone turned from confused to mocking. But the 8-year-old picked up her hockey bag and forged ahead. Raome spent the next weeks studying every word her coaches said and practicing her heart out. They recognized her talent, and she returned to Lac Beau Paul looking like a real goalie. But despite her newfound confidence, her father had some bad news to share. There was a new goalie in town, a boy, that local parents started pressuring Mr. Raome to try out. Out of fear, folks would say he was favoring his daughter, or, more importantly, fear people would say Raome was only in net, not because of her skills, but because she was his daughter. Raome's father agreed to sub the new goalie in net for the next game. Devastated, Raome was once again relegated to defense. The new goalie let in 9 goals, resulting in a 9-1 loss, their worst game of the season. But Raome said in her memoir, Alone in Front of the Net, that she won something that night, steadfast confidence. Just because he was a boy didn't mean he'd be better. The following year, Raome attended the Adam AA training camp, and out of 8 goalies, she made it to the final 3. But in the end, she didn't make the team. She couldn't escape the feeling that her gender played a role in the rejection, but she could never prove it. Instead, she was placed in the lower tier, Adam CC. There she found herself among unfamiliar faces, faces she hadn't grown up playing alongside, faces who weren't used to a girl on the ice. At age 11, a prepubescent Raome could blend in with the crowd. A parent after one game even made her take her mask off to prove to another parent she was, in fact, a girl. But regardless, she instinctively knew she had to prove herself in a way her male peers did not. If she got injured, she never showed it. She learned to remain stoic in the face of fractured bones, gashes, and bruises. She couldn't, quote, grimace and rub her wounds. Instead, she blinked back tears. She knew if she slipped and let it be known she was in pain, she'd be called a crybaby little girl, too soft to be a goalie. That year, her team won the championship, dethroning the reigning title holders. And Rayome was awarded Most Valuable Player. Over the summers, Rayome and her brothers played baseball. She was the catcher. They roller skated, and in the winters, it was all hockey and skiing. But tired of dragging both skis and hockey sticks across Lac Beau Port, the Rayomes presented their children with an ultimatum. They had to choose skiing or hockey. For their sons, it was a toss-up. One leaned hockey, the other chose skiing. But for their daughter, the answer was written in the puck marks across the basement walls. When she broke the news to her ski coach, she was met with the same bafflement she'd endured at the goalie camp registration table. Her coach asked her why. Why she would do this. She was never going to make it at a higher level in hockey. There was no women's NHL. There wasn't even women's hockey at the Olympics. But if she stuck with skiing, then she might have a shot at the Olympics one day. But Rayome told her coach her mind was made up, and nothing could check her resolve. Soon, Rayome was old enough to graduate from Adam to Pee Wee, which meant another hockey camp would decide her fate. She put on a solid performance for the coaches. She was proud of herself. All signs were pointing to a double-A year. But she was, once again, cut down to double-C. Rayome didn't understand. She played better than the other boys. It was Adam all over again. She went home and burst into tears. But Rayome later heard the double-A coach had told people there was no way he was ever going to put a girl on his team. That she may have been better than the other goalies at camp, but a girl wouldn't be able to handle the pressures of a tournament. After all, she was only invited to the camp as a formality anyway. Rayome dried her tears. It was the jolt she needed to regroup and focus. She said, "Someday they'll give in." And we'll be right back.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
At every stage, Rayom's love of hockey was dismissed as merely a phase. When she was 3 years old, skating around the backyard rink, when she was 5 and playing shinny with the neighborhood kids, and when she turned 9 and insisted on playing in the boys' league. But when she turned peewee age, and the phase hadn't ended, all eyes turned to Rayom. You see, by 11 or 12, many players, and their parents, have gauged whether they have the juice to take it all the way, or the drive to try. For many, it's no longer a hobby, surely no longer a phase. They're all in. And seeing a girl all in taking a spot away from an NHL hopeful didn't sit right with some parents. During Rayom's peewee games, those whose children weren't playing against her cheered her on, a girl boldly going where no girl had gone before. But those whose children's shots were blocked by Rayom, or those whose children were fellow goaltenders wanting ice time, didn't exactly hide their feelings about the situation. Parents accused the coaches of wasting time on a girl who'd never make the NHL anyway. They said she was outright stealing a male goalie's place. They protested her presence in the dressing rooms, even though she'd started changing on her own and joining only once the boys were decent. They said she couldn't handle the peewee level and that she'd crack under pressure at a real competition. Well, enter the Quebec International Peewee Hockey Tournament. The Quebec International Peewee Hockey Tournament is an annual minor hockey tournament held in Quebec City since 1960. Not incidentally, it coincides with the city's annual Winter Carnival. Over 100 teams from across Canada, the U.S., and Europe travel to the province's capital to compete for the trophy. Once attended by the likes of Wayne Gretzky, Guy Lafleur, Daniel Bouchard, and Mario Lemieux, the prestigious event is said to be many junior hockey players' first brush with the pro hockey experience. A stadium, 15,000 fans, photographers, and a number of players every year go on to play in the show. In 1977, for example, 31 players at the tournament went on to wear NHL jerseys. Now, it was the tournament's 25th anniversary. It was announced Rayom's team was a top team going into the event. And it was right about then, the press caught wind that there was a girl lacing up in the dressing room. Up until the year 1980, there was a rule at the Quebec City International Peewee Hockey Tournament that all players must be, quote, of the masculine sex. But the restriction was lifted, and in the years since, no girl had ever entered. Well, once word spread an 11-year-old just shattered that glass ceiling, her name was suddenly splashed across newspapers. Manon Rayom goes to Peewee Tournament, the first girl in 25 years. And with that came an avalanche of press. Cameras everywhere, reporters looking for interviews, sound bites from the girl. They started asking her opponents what they thought of Rayom's presence at the tournament. One boy said he wondered what she was doing there. Another said he didn't think a girl would be strong enough to play in goal. One parent said, "What the heck is she doing here? There are lots of boys who want to play goalie." Suddenly, Rayom was forced to block doubts like pucks. If she let her guard down for even a second, it would be proof girls simply couldn't keep up. Before the puck dropped in her first game, the pressure had mounted. All eyes were on Rayom in net. Her legs were shaking. Her nervous mother chose to sit far away from the other parents in the stands so as not to overhear the unabashed heckling of her 11-year-old. When the puck hit the ice, suddenly the offense was barreling toward her. The first shot of the game, and it went in Rayom's net. The cameras were flashing in her eyes, but Rayom focused her mind and made multiple killer saves in a row. Soon the crowd was on their feet, cheering and chanting her name. Rayom's team won that night, 12-2. Suddenly, people were stopping her on the streets of Quebec City. She was stunned. For all she knew, she was just playing the great game of hockey, same as everyone else. Rayom's team lost in the semifinals, but it was a good game and a good tournament. She said in her memoir, the dream she'd had since she was 5 years old had come true. She had dared to squeeze into hockey's half-open door. She picked up the Sunday paper, and there a headline read, "One day Manon Rayom will make the National Hockey League, if no one prevents her." The following year, Rayom had reached bantam age, 13, and it was time for another camp. She'd spent her Adam years in the second tier, and her Pee Wee years in the second tier, but this time she wouldn't settle for anything less than bantam double A. She had earned it, and she proved herself at the camp. Well, she was right. The bantam AA coach, a former Quebec Nordique player, saw major potential in her, and Manon Rayom became the first girl in history to play bantam AA. It was a milestone for women in hockey. But a few clicks north of Quebec City, folks weren't exactly popping champagne. One day in a tournament, Rayom was put in goal, and the father of the team's alternate goalie became infuriated in the stands. The idea that his son would sit out a game while a girl took his place sent him huffing and puffing straight out of the arena. What started as whispers had become an uproar. And while she tried to do her best and block out the noise, Rayom said in her book that one would have to be blind and deaf to tune out that commotion. It was getting harder and harder to concentrate. Players on opposing teams were being encouraged to scare her, to aim the puck at her face, or shove her into the back of the net. Her father had to MacGyver special pads that would fit around her chest. But Rayom said, "I fear no puck." In spite of it all, she put her head down and continued to play. But as time went on, she started getting less and less ice time. Turns out, the father who stormed out of the arena was league director. She was removed from the net and placed onto the bench. A girl in Pee Wee was unexpected. A girl in Bantam was unwelcome. But a girl playing midget level was unthinkable. As Rayom approached the next level up in hockey, she was consistently, and not so subtly, reminded that her skills would be better suited in a ringette league. But at one of her hockey tournaments, a junior A scout was in attendance, in search of a midget triple A level goalie. And when he saw Rayom's performance, he immediately scribbled her name down on his draft list. He noted her swift moves, her unique style, her sharp reflexes. But Rayom said once he realized there was a girl behind the mask, he scratched her name right off his list. Everyone on Rayom's team was invited to the midget triple A camp. Everyone but Rayom. She did attend midget double A camp, and it came down to her and one other goalie. But Rayom said she could tell it didn't matter how well she played. Their minds were made up. He was chosen. She was cut. Devastated, the teen who'd spent the last decade holding it together finally fell apart. Her mother gently told her that maybe it was time to give up. She couldn't go any higher, so why put herself through all of this? Rayom started to wonder if maybe her mother, and the parents, and the players, and the coaches were right. Maybe she should hang up her skates. On her 17th birthday, she realized she'd lost her spirit. She said in her memoir she was no stranger to roadblocks, but this time there was no detour. It was a dead end. Her teammates continued up the ranks. Meanwhile, her hockey career was over. A few months passed, then 6 months, then a whole year went by. Then, on July 21st, 1992, Rayom turned on the news. The International Olympic Committee had voted to approve women's hockey as an official Olympic sport. The game wasn't over. In the next episode, for the first time, Rayom plays with women. It's Canada versus the USA at the World Championships. Then the goalie gets a strange letter in the mail from the Tampa Bay Lightning. Join us next time for Rejecting Manon Rayom, Part 2. The Rejection Podcast is an Apostrophe Podcast production and is recorded in our Airstream mobile recording studio. This series is hosted and written by me, Sydney O'Reilly. Research, Allison Pinches. Director, Callie O'Reilly. We don't regret to inform you. Our engineer is Jeff Devine. Producer, Debbie O'Reilly. Theme music by Ian Lefevre and Ari Posner. Tunes are provided by APM Music, and we're proudly powered by Acast. The major source for this episode is Alone in Front of the Net by Chantal Gilbert and Manon Rayom. All other significant sources are listed in the show notes on our website, apostrophepodcasts.ca/rejection. You can follow us on social at @apostrophepod. This series is executive produced by Terry O'Reilly. See you next time.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.